just one of the gifts that Baba has given us, is to be able to meet in silence and have an exchange of vibrations. I know that each and every one sitting here is not just a soul, is not just a star, but is a whole world in themselves, a whole universe that contains all of eternity in relation to your journey. Every thought you've ever had, every action you've ever performed, every interaction and reaction. And so a world spinning around, and sometimes we collide with other worlds, and so it goes. The overall topic, of course, is the journey and the destination. When did the journey start? Did it start when you came to Baba? Or did it start in the Golden Age? Or did it start even before that? Are we always on a journey? We're both travelers and pilgrims. And I think, like myself, many would have arrived at Baba's door not even fully cognizant of the fact that they were seeking, let alone what they were seeking, what they were looking for. That everything now, with the light of knowledge, and in retrospect, we can see so very clearly. A couple of days ago, I was in the car with one of our lovely brothers from Yan Sarovar. His name is Abhiram. And I've known Abhiram for a long time, both here and when he's been doing service in either London or Oxford or Peace Village. But I'd never really asked him about how he came to Baba. And it's always an interesting story. And one thing I know for sure, as many Brahmins as there are or have been or will be, each one has her or his own story, and each one loves their own story, and they like to tell their story, right? So I asked Abhiram how long he had been in Gyan Sarovar, and he told me 25 years. So it's about 25 years since Gyan Sarovar started. So I said, does that mean then that you were here from the beginning? And he said, yes. Then I asked him, did you come as a Sevadari or you were already surrendered? And so the essential difference in the two things, surrendered is permanent, Sevadari comes for a period of time. And I was amused when he told me that his parents actually forced him to come here to do 2 weeks seva. He didn't want to do it, but they forced him. And so then I asked him, but then what was, because now he's surrendered, you can't be a sevadari for 25 years in the one place. And so I asked him, what inspired your surrender? And he said, the land of Gyan Sarovar. And I found that very interesting, because unlike, say, Pandavabhavan, Gyan Sarovar had just been built, so it didn't really have a functioning divine family as such just yet. Things were not in place, but he said it was the land of Gyan Sarovar that inspired his surrender. He felt like as if he had come home. Now, I ask you whether in relation to a center or any one of the campuses that Madhaban is made up of, or maybe even interacting with Brahmins, or it might even have been a picture of Brahma Baba, and on your going there, arriving there, or seeing or experiencing those things, that you felt that you had come home. Is that anyone's experience? Show me hands. Oh, how interesting. And so I realized that coming home is really a metaphor for your destiny. It wasn't that you had come home in as much as you had arrived at what was to be your destiny. It didn't mean that your destiny in that moment or that instance had been accomplished. But what you did have, or what you had found, was the means by which your destiny and or your purpose could be accomplished. A little bit like if you've been brought up in a safe environment, in a secure and happy home, then you have great confidence to move out into the world, and on the basis of your training, you are not hesitant in dealing with whatever you might have to deal with, and all the while knowing that you have that secure home to return to if and when you need it. And so I think that's part of the many gifts that Baba has given us. A place from where we can recognize and fulfill our destiny. And so now, what were we looking for when we came to Baba? Actually, some may not have been looking for anything. But it seems to me that there was a group of us in my early days, and I think I can include Sister Sharona in that, who were travelers, who were on a journey, if you like. They were moving around the world, and maybe at first it was just the sense of adventure, but at some point, awakening to the idea that they were actually looking for something. And of course, we now come to recognize that what we were looking for was, in fact, something that we had previously, something that had belonged to us, but we had either lost or forgotten. And so in this sense of destiny and of coming back again, it's not just about a memory of having done it the last time, But I think at an even more profound level, and if it hasn't happened you yet in your Brahman life, it happens at different times for different people, there's the awareness that you are back here again, not just because of last kalpa, but that in a previous birth, perhaps not that many ago, but somewhere from the Copper Age onwards, you projected and made a promise to God as to what this lifetime would be for. And this is the time of fulfilling that promise. Again, do any of you feel that? You have the awareness that you had a covenant with God from another incarnation? Right. And you can also see how the drama works in that things will keep happening to try to get us on course and onto the path. And will also be invested in keeping us on the path. But sometimes we can't read the signs and the signals due to the quantity of, not least what Sharona was mentioning, the overthinking. And so in coming to Baba, you know, just like you will find with groups of people, whether religious, social, could be family units or whatever, but there's tacit agreements about the way of being, about behavior, about interaction, so as to make the unit more cohesive. So there's rules and there's regulations and so on. But I feel that with Baba, that he gave us something else. That it wasn't about the rules and the regulations. It wasn't about ethics or morals. Although you could easily say that the BK philosophy lends itself to all of that. But Baba did not give us those things. Those were a little bit more manufactured. But the secret code that God gave us, and I can say we have it exclusively, but it's not being withheld from anyone. And that secret code that informs everything else is simply soul consciousness. That changes everything. Everything. And so it's with soul consciousness, not only do the eyes open, you get an extra eye for good measure. The head opens. The discernment returns. And of course the heart. There's also an expansion of the heart's cord. And as well as that, another gift within soul consciousness that is not available, again, we want to make it available to everyone. We want them to access it and use it in the way it was intended by Baba. And that is that it provides a unique means of communication with God that was not available to us before. And in that, we are able to see ourselves and understand ourselves through God's vision for us. And perhaps something that's a little bit paradoxical, in that here you have, how can I praise Baba? But the greatest entity, the embodiment of truth, of love, of power, the one whom everyone else bows to. And here we are, when we come to Baba, at our most tamo pradhan, our most degraded, at the lowest nadir of our journey. And he surrenders to us. Can you handle God surrendering to you? Or does that take time? Because the first thing that he gives us in giving us the awareness of ourselves as souls, it's like as if he's handing us back our self-worth, our self-confidence. But even then, compared with him, and the fact that he surrenders himself to us, and that straight away, as he has mentioned, what are all these things that he gives us? What are these gifts that he gives us? And every one of those gifts should be adding to our sense of self-worth. But sometimes, in fact, we feel more burdened because we'll refuse them, we'll reject them, we'll say, I'm not this, I'm not this. And so Baba says he gives us the crown, the throne, and the tilak. Does he decide whether I'm worthy or not? Did I have to do anything to deserve it? Of course not. And so the tilak is his knowledge, the soul consciousness, the self-awareness, the awareness of God. And he gives us his heart throne. You can say yoga, that we can sit on the heart throne of God and commune with God, be in communion with God. And he gives us the amazing, another gift, the crown of responsibility for service. In that he trusts me, unpolished as I am, incomplete as I am, ignorant as I am, that he trusts me to go out into the world and tell other people about him. He trusts me with his words. I sometimes say that Baba trusts his words in my mouth. Is that not amazing? Is that not amazing? And so he's constantly praising us, whereas in bhakti, it's the other way around. They're praising God, and here God is praising us. And so this journey that we've all been on, as I say, I like this idea of the pilgrim. And once again, it's not that the journey finishes when I arrive at Baba's door. And I think that's the quality of a pilgrim, that the pilgrim that every day can be a destination. And the following day, you start again. That there's always more of the journey. And the thing with the pilgrim, they always travel. How does a pilgrim travel? Do they have 50 pounds of luggage? No, a pilgrim travels light, very light, because like the bird, it doesn't have a home. It doesn't stay in one place. It's not attached to anything. And yet, it's as if what you always do have in your pocket or in your bag is a compass. And that compass that will always point you in the right direction. Do all of you know you have a compass? What is the compass that's always going to bring you back? That's always going to show true north. It's always going to bring you back into alignment. What is it? Might be different for each one of you. The Merlee is your compass. Beautiful. The Merlee is my compass. I like that. Tell me some more things. Srimat is a compass. That is always very direct and very specific. Sorry? Mariadas. Okay, the Mariadas. All of these will keep me aligned. But I was thinking overall, and all of these are methods. All of these are things that I use. And again, I should be using them not out of force or just habit, but as if they're already part of me, they're in my blood system, that they're natural to me. But overriding all of that, overarching, and it can be like, have you ever had a situation, maybe in your center or whatever, and the person is very difficult, and you're not quite sure what, if anything, you should do about it. But in trying to be charitable, what is the one thing that you will say for that soul who's a Brahmin? Their behavior could be very bad, could be very rude, but what is the one forgiving aspect that you will say for each and every one? He, she has love for Baba. That, I think, is my compass. And so not just the compass here in the Confluence Age, but throughout our many, many lifetimes, that has guided me, prevented perhaps maybe mistakes or mishaps. And so where did that love come from? And we know, of course, that it was almost like a seed, if you like, that Baba left in the heart of each one of us last Kalpa. You know, and that it never deteriorated. That no matter what else happened on the planet or in your life or in your world, that and however you define it, whether God in whatever form, or it may even have been just truth, the idea of truth, and that it was that kept magnetizing you and compelling you towards where you have reached today. And so those were our desires. And it's like many times people will say, I am a seeker of truth. And I ask them, well, what are you going to do with it when you find it? And mostly they hadn't thought that far ahead. It was just that the search, the quest was its own fulfillment. But for us, the quest isn't its own fulfillment. You know, that there's something even more than that. And so this invitation now from God, what's God inviting us for? What are some of the invitations Baba has given you? I remember one of the first things that really touched my heart, hearing it in a Murli. And I didn't become a Brahmin easily. But when I heard Baba say in a Murli, "Help me with your purity." This was a request, an invitation. Again, God saying, "Help me, you little person, you, help me with your purity." And the universe is inviting us, or creation is inviting us, to help it complete itself. It needs all of us, you and I, to be in place in order for it to complete its cycle, its circle. And humanity itself is inviting us. What's the invitation humanity is giving us? What does humanity want from us? Give me peace. Give me a glimpse of God. Or show me the way home. And so, does this make you feel small? Does it make you feel arrogant? No. I think it does create some sense of humility and wonder, even, that I, in my finite state, still in my whatever degree of ignorance or unfinished product that I am, that I, in conjunction with God, have something that I can provide to humanity, to creation, and possibly even to God. But Baba is a little bit like, I think sometimes, you know, the mom who's washing the dishes and she lets the 3-year-old kid come and help mommy do the dishes, you know, and, "Oh, how wonderful you are for helping mommy do the dishes." The kid didn't really do a good job, and the mom could have done it by herself, but still the kid now feels great that she was able to help, and she's encouraged to help even more. And so I think Baba encourages us in the same way, that I'm actually able to give something that is of use to God, that I'm useful to God and to humanity and to nature. And so, are you aware that you have a destiny to fulfill? And it's not as an organization, because again, that's one of the wonderful things here. Its first lesson, and I go back to it time and time again as it informs so much of my way of being in the world, and that is when Baba tells us that the original nature of all souls is the same. So I'm connected. And then Baba says, "No two of you are identical. Each one of you is unique." And so, do you have a sense of your own uniqueness? And it's not about better than, lesser than, greater than, no comparisons in this at all. But that I'm here, I have a right to be here, I have a right to all that Baba is offering, and it is right that I am here. Creation made me room. Creation wanted me here. And so my gratitude and my happiness should be a constant. Baba says, and I like this very much, that the Brahmin life should be a life of pleasure. And we're not talking about superficial pleasures, but that there's always the default setting is happiness, is well-being. And in that openness, in that soul consciousness, it's as well as you're automatically generating something, there's also an openness and a willingness to receive. And in that way, moving along the path is one of lightness, is one of ease. And so I sometimes question the idea of having love for the self. You know, ideally, yes, we're supposed to love ourselves. And theoretically, I can say, yes, I love myself. But I honestly do not believe I know about the fullness of love yet. But I do know how to like myself. And I think it's very, very important that each one like themselves. You know? And that then enables me to like others as well. And whatever it takes to make your way less complicated and troublesome and bothersome, I think that they're really small things that we can do in order to make that happen. And one is just that. That always being in at least the intention to like rather than to criticize or to complain. Because very often, and we all know people who are hypercritical, right? Nobody in this room, I'm sure. But they'll always see the flaw, they'll always see the defect, and will be quite vocal about that. And what it simply tells me is that they're hurting. That it's a disguise, that they've disguised it even from themselves. The pain that they're carrying from some old thing, whether in this lifetime or another. And I just give you an example. One study, Janki was taking class in Pandav Bhavan, and she asked the question, how many of you have cried in the last week? And a number of hands went up, and I remember thinking and maybe expressing it to whoever I was next to. I said, well, I don't cry, but I get angry. And suddenly it hit me that my anger was a camouflage for the tears. That it was, that there was some pain there. But of course, when you're angry, you appear, never mind arrogant, but strong, you know. And of course, the person who's crying, they're going to get the attention. The one who's angry is going to, people will back off. And so I know this too, that where the nature is critical and always complaining, that it is hiding some deep hurt within the soul. And because of not being able to acknowledge it, then it's very difficult to allow Baba to deal with it. And so this is perhaps a small thing, but it can sometimes get in the way of the ease of the path. And sometimes, too, maybe disappointments come in our Brahman life. You know, I've been this number of years in Gyan, and my sanskars haven't changed that much, or my yoga's not as deep as I would have expected it to be. And so that these little things can sometimes cause me to lose altitude and encourage me then to be a little bit careless. And then that almost becomes like a self-prophecy. You know, you see, I knew this would happen, or I knew that wouldn't happen. But not realizing, of course, that somehow I have contributed to that state of affairs. And I think, as well as just another gift that Baba gives us, that he offers all the gifts to the world. But the world is not able to take advantage of them. And each Brahman will utilize them to the extent that they value them. And I think one of the greatest gifts that he's given us, apart from soul consciousness, which even if I were never to learn anything else of the Gyan, and I were only to focus on that, where do you think you would arrive? Where do you think you would arrive? If you sincerely, if you had understood soul consciousness and you practiced it religiously, do you think you would arrive at God consciousness? You're allowed to think. Yes or no? Huh? I think so. I think so. Not that that's going to happen, right? Because we do have all of the Gyan. But it's this thing. This is where we have to keep coming back to our childhood again and again. And so soul consciousness, and then of course the awareness of Baba, the relationship with Baba, not just the awareness, but the relationship with Baba. But the other gift, the world feels that it has God, or that it knows God, or it's praying to God, or it's worshiping God, or that their religion has God, that they have a monopoly on God, right? They're not going to say they have soul consciousness. That's something only we will say. And the other thing that we have that the world doesn't have, do you know what it is? That Baba has given us. Well, his teaching, that's broadly speaking. Yes, brother. Divine intellect. Yes, that's one of the first things he gives us, of course. And although I can say even a divine intellect would be number wise, but I think the thing that he's given us, and maybe we don't always value, and it's only his to give, and that is time. Sangam. God has given us the gift of Sangam Yug. Does anybody else have that gift? Absolutely not. And the laws within Sangam Yug are different from the laws and what rules outside of Sangam. And so he's taken us out of the mundane and brought us into another, whether you want to call it a time warp or extra time, he sometimes refers to it as that leap age. And so if you don't know you have it, How can you use it? The world doesn't have it, so how can they use it? We have it. And what are we using it for? Now, one of the things in fulfilling this contract with God, in accepting His invitation for the divine intellect, for being the holders of His gyan, or of the relationship with Him, or of the new world, that in the future, I just lost my train of thought. Where was I going with that? Yeah, He's given us this. Oh, yeah, thank you. No, the contract. The contract or the covenant that we made with God. How many of you feel you're surrendered? Yeah, this is like, and the rest of you? Why are your hands not up? Surrender simply means to offer yourself. That's all. Thank you. Surrender means just to offer yourself. Didn't we all consider surrender shortly after we came to Baba? I mean, this is implicit within the rules and the laws of karma. When you get something, you want to give a return. And part of the soul's wisdom knew that the absolute return, once again, that you're going to give a certain quality of gift to different people, right? And so God being the highest, you want to give God the greatest gift. And so you at least ruminate on the possibility of surrender. Now, I'm not talking about the traditional surrender of the white sari and living in the center, or kurta if it's a brother, and living in the center. But surrender is to do with the intellect, is to do with dying alive. Immortality doesn't mean that you don't die. I think for me, immortality means that you keep dying, you keep dying, you keep dying, you know, you keep surrendering. It's connected with surrendering. And so when we took on this contract with God, and He's promising us not only all of these gifts in the confluence age, and by which, when we use them, there will be even greater gifts in the golden age. But of course, we all prefer the confluence age, don't we? Who prefers the confluence to Satyug? And who prefers Satyug? You have to work hard here in order to earn that. But no, we understand, because now is the relationship with Baba. You're seeing the full spectrum, whereas in the golden age, and at another time maybe we can speak about how amazing the golden age is going to be. And Baba has given us an intellect that allows us to think about it, not just in the traditional way of, you know, everybody will be in harmony with each other, but He is always revealing secrets in all of His murlis. But in this surrendering to Him or accepting His invitation, that we also become, if not to begin with, but at some point, aware of the fine print. And that is that the confluence age isn't just for the relationship with God and for creating the new world, but I've also undertaken to deal with my own karmic situations. that when we come to Baba, we think it's all about peace, love, and light. And so know that if you want the fullness of the peace, love, and light, then you also have to give time to acknowledge what it is that has gotten in the way of the peace, love, and light. And so this is where sometimes we can become disheartened. Because how is our karma going to manifest? Sometimes it'll be in the Brahman family, it'll be in relationships, it'll be with our health, it'll be with our possessions, all of these things. And yet, look at the examples we have in front of us of people going through great bodily difficulties, but never the nature of complaining or questioning why. Knowing that this too, if my attitude is right, will contribute not only to the settlement, but also to the creation of something else. I sometimes say that Baba makes us, you know this word, shape shifters? Like you'll see it in, I guess, some of those Star Wars kind of movies and things like that, where one thing becomes another thing and so on. So Baba does that for us. We become shape shifters, that we can change something that is one form, and by applying a way of seeing it, applying a consciousness to it, we've changed it into something beneficial, something powerful, something that becomes a bridge for me to pass over to the next level or to the next phase or stage. He changes when we sit in meditation. Isn't that about shape-shifting? You're no longer that corporeal dimension. You're not limited to the borders. But there's light. There's an effulgence of light. There's the image of the angel. You've changed your form. You've changed your shape. And so Baba, apart from everything else, one of the things that I love about Baba, about his gyan, and about his senior instruments, and again, my early life was with Daddy, is how immensely entertaining they are. That it's all very entertaining. That there really is not an excuse to be unhappy or upset, or if there is, that it shouldn't be long-lasting. And so what sometimes gets in the way, it's almost like the old programming overrides the new program that Baba's trying to install in the soul. And so the old one will override it. But it's not a permanent situation. Just reboot, you know, and once again come back in alignment. And this I say so many times, but making these promises to your own self, and one in particular is when you sit for yoga, you will never see yourself as anything other than how Baba sees you. He doesn't see you with defects. He doesn't see you with capacity. What does Baba see when he looks at you? Doesn't he see himself? Try it. Are we going to have traffic control? all of us know that we respond to others if we're not clear as to who it is we are, then we will like or dislike people in relation to those things in ourselves. We're seeing in the other either what we like in ourselves or what we don't like in ourselves. Is this true or is it only me? Yeah. I realized this many years ago. Again, it was Pandav Bhavan and Daddy Janki was taking class, and I was thinking to myself, why do I have so much love for her? Is it because I know she, like Baba, has love for me? And that wasn't it. And then there was the realization that she represented everything that I'd ever wanted for myself, even before Gyan. That was how I saw myself, as this old lady, you know, not traditional or anything, and wise, and more in common with the younger generation than what would have been my peer group. And so that was a big realization. And so we know it in terms of the human experience. But does it work the same way with God? God said in the Murli not so long ago about how he has love, about some speciality in each one that he fell in love with. So what is that thing in you that God fell in love with? Which is also, if you really think about it, of God. You know? So when he looks, he sees himself in you. Can I accept that? Or do I have to apologize for all my defects and things that I haven't yet accomplished or done? And so just that one thing, promise yourself that when you sit in yoga, that you will only see yourself the way that God sees you. And you don't have to explain yourself or justify yourself or prove yourself. None of those things. Any more than a little child has to do that with her mother. You know. The mother knows that she's her creation. And the mother's always looking to see herself in the child too. And so Baba only sees himself in us. And it could be as simple as just the light that he is. Baba's only seeing the light that is me. And so in that way, drawing that energy, drawing that power from Baba, and all of these things so that I can fulfill my destiny and be a useful part of creation in helping God and helping humanity. No doubt, right? You're on the right path, yeah? And even that, you might ask yourself, what makes this the right path for you? It's like sometimes as an instrument, you have to represent the organization, right? And so there's a certain way you have to show up in the world so that you're properly representing the Brahma Kumaris, the institution that God created. Well, he actually created the Yajna. The institution came later. But in the same way, the institution or the organization has to represent me, you know. And so that I totally align myself with the way that God sees things and the way that they manifest in our beloved Brahma Baba. And as more and more time goes on and the world continues with its games, the more and more appreciation there is of Brahma Baba, the man, the role model, and what it was that he gave, and what an honest instrument for God. And so I think the distinguishing things for Brahma Baba, the instant surrender. We all have examples in front of us. He didn't. The instant surrender, and thereafter, with every realization, there was no gap between the realization and the implementation. And so the generosity of that one soul and him, I'm not even aware of how conscious he would have been of it, but that generosity that extended to the whole of humanity, making it possible for them to do no less if they so choose. And so, back to the original question that you need to ask, the only question you ever need to ask, who am I? Who am I in the context of the path I have chosen? Thank you, Om Shanti. We just have a few minutes in Baba's Yad.